Chapter 6 The Effect of Price Fluctuation Section 1 Fluctuations in the Price of Raw Materials and Their Direct Effects on the Rate of Profit The assumption in this case, as in previous ones, is that no change takes place in the rate of surplus value. It is necessary to analyze the case in its pure form. However, it might be possible for a specific capital, whose rate of surplus value remains unchanged, to employ an increasing or decreasing number of laborers. In consequence of contraction or expansion caused by such fluctuations in the price of raw materials as we are to analyze here. In that case, the quantity of surplus value might vary, while the rate of surplus value remains the same. Yet this should also be disregarded here as a side issue. If improvements of machinery and changes in the price of raw materials simultaneously influence either the number of laborers employed by a definite capital or the level of wages, one has but to put together 1. The effect caused by the variations of constant capital on the rate of profit, and 2. The effect caused by variations in wages on the rate of profit. The result is then obtained of itself. But in general, it should be noted here, as in the previous case, that if variations take place, either due to savings in constant capital or due to fluctuations in the price of raw materials, they always affect the rate of profit, even if they leave the wage, hence the rate and amount of surplus value, untouched. They change the magnitude of total capital in the fraction rate of surplus value times variable capital over total capital, and thus the value of the whole fraction. It is therefore immaterial, in this case as well, in contrast to what we found in our analysis of surplus value, in which sphere of production these variations occur. Whether or not the production branches affected by them produce necessities for laborers, or constant capital for the production of such necessities. The deductions made here are equally valid for variations occurring in the production of luxury articles, and by luxury articles we here mean all production that does not serve the reproduction of labor power. The raw materials here include auxiliary materials as well, such as indigo, coal, gas, etc. Furthermore, so far as machinery is concerned under this head, its own raw material consists of iron, wood, leather, etc. Its own price is therefore affected by fluctuations in the price of raw materials used in its construction. To the extent that its price is raised through fluctuations, either in the price of the raw materials of which it consists, or of the auxiliary materials consumed in its operation, the rate of profit falls pro tanto, proportionately, and vice versa. In the following analysis, we shall confine ourselves to fluctuations in the price of raw materials, not so far as they go to make up the raw materials of machinery serving as means of labor or as auxiliary materials applied in its operation, but in so far as they enter the process in which commodities are produced. There is just one thing to be noted here. The natural wealth in iron, coal, wood, etc., which are the principal elements used in the construction and operation of machinery, presents itself here as a natural fertility of capital, and is a factor determining the rate of profit, irrespective of the high or low level of wages. Since the rate of profit is surplus value over total capital, or S over C plus V, it is evident that everything causing a variation in the magnitude of constant capital C, and thereby of total capital, must also bring about a variation in the rate of profit, even if S and V, and their mutual relation, remain unaltered. Now, raw materials are one of the principal components of constant capital. Even in industries which consume no actual raw materials, These enter the picture as auxiliary materials or components of machinery, etc., and their price fluctuations thus accordingly influence the rate of profit. Should the price of raw material fall by an amount equal to D, then S over total capital, or S over C plus V, becomes S over total capital minus D, or S over C minus D plus V. Thus, the rate of profit rises. Conversely, if the price of raw material rises, then S over total capital, or S over C plus V, becomes S over total capital plus D, or S over C plus D plus V, and the rate of profit falls. Other conditions being equal, the rate of profit, therefore, falls and rises inversely to the price of raw material. This shows, among other things, how important the low price of raw material is for industrial countries. Even if fluctuations in the price of raw materials are not accompanied by variations in the sales sphere of the product, and thus quite aside from the relation of demand to supply. It follows furthermore that foreign trade influences the rate of profit, regardless of its influence on wages through the cheapening of the necessities of life. The point is that it affects the prices of raw or auxiliary materials consumed in industry and agriculture. It is due to an as yet imperfect understanding of the nature of the rate of profit and of its specific difference from the rate of surplus value that, on the one hand, economists like Torrens, R. Torrens, An Essay on the Production of Wealth, London, 1821, wrongly explain the marked influence of the prices of raw material on the rate of profit, which they note through practical experience, and that, on the other, economists like Ricardo, de Ricardo, On the Principles of Political Economy and Taxation, 3rd edition, London, 1821, who cling to general principles, do not recognize the influence of, say, world trade on the rate of profit. This makes clear the great importance to industry of this elimination or reduction of customs duties on raw materials. The rational development of the protective tariff system made the utmost reduction of import duties on raw materials one of its cardinal principles. This and the abolition of the duty on corn was the main object of the English free traders, who were primarily concerned with having the duty on cotton lifted as well. The use of flour in the cotton industry may serve as an illustration of the importance of a price reduction for an article which is not strictly a raw material, but an auxiliary, and at the same time one of the principal elements of nourishment. As far back as 1837, R. H. Greg calculated that the 100,000 power looms and 250,000 hand looms then operating in the cotton mills of Great Britain annually consumed 41 million pounds of flour to smooth the warp. Footnote: The Factory Question and the 10 Hours Bill by R. H. Greg, London, 1837. End of footnote. He added a third of this quantity for bleaching and other processes, and estimated the total annual value of the flour so consumed at £342,000 for the preceding 10 years. A comparison with flour prices on the continent showed that the higher flour price, forced upon manufacturers by corn tariffs alone, amounted to £170,000 per year. Greg estimated the sum at a minimum of £200,000 for 1837, and cited a firm for which the flour price difference amounted to £1,000 annually. As a result, quote, great manufacturers, thoughtful, calculating men of business, have said that 10 hours' labour would be quite sufficient if the Corn Laws were repealed, unquote. Reports of the Inspector of Factories, October 1848. The Corn Laws were repealed. So were the duties on cotton and other raw materials. But no sooner had this been accomplished than the opposition of the manufacturers to the 10 hours bill became more violent than ever. And when the 10-hour factory day nevertheless became a law soon after, the first result was a general attempt to reduce wages. The value of raw and auxiliary materials passes entirely and all at one time into the value of the product in the manufacture of which they are consumed, while the elements of fixed capital transfer their value to the product only gradually in proportion to their wear and tear. It follows that the price of the product is influenced far more by the price of raw materials than by that of fixed capital, although the rate of profit is determined by the total value of the capital applied, no matter how much of it is consumed in the making of the product. But it is evident, although we merely mention it in passing, since we here still assume that commodities are sold at their values, so that price fluctuations caused by competition do not as yet concern us, that the expansion or contraction of the market depends on the price of the individual commodity, and is inversely proportional to the rise or fall of this price. It actually develops, therefore, that the price of the product does not rise in proportion to that of the raw material, and that it does not fall in proportion to that of raw material. Consequently, the rate of profit falls lower in one instance and rises higher in the other than would have been the case if products were sold at their value. Further, the quantity and value of the employed machinery grows with the development of labour productivity, but not in the same proportion as this productivity. That is, not in the proportion in which this machinery increases its output. In those branches of industry, therefore, which do consume raw materials, that is, in which the subject of labour is itself a product of previous labour, the growing productivity of labour is expressed precisely in the proportion in which a larger quantity of raw material absorbs a definite quantity of labour. Hence, in the increasing amount of raw material converted in, say, 1 hour into products or processed into commodities. The value of raw material, therefore, forms an ever-growing component of the value of the commodity product in proportion to the development of the productivity of labour, not only because it passes wholly into this latter value, but also because, in every aliquot part of the aggregate product, the portion representing depreciation of machinery and the portion formed by the newly added labour both continually decrease. Owing to this falling tendency, the other portion of the value representing raw material increases proportionally, unless this increase is counterbalanced by a proportionate decrease in the value of the raw material arising from the growing productivity of the labour employed in its own production. Further, raw and auxiliary materials, just like wages, form parts of the circulating capital, and must therefore be continually replaced in their entirety through the sale of the product, while only the depreciation is to be renewed in the case of machinery, and first of all in the form of a reserve fund. It is, moreover, in no way essential for each individual sale to contribute its share to this reserve fund, so long as the total annual sales contribute their annual share. This shows again how a rise in the price of raw material can curtail or arrest the entire process of reproduction if the price realized by the sale of the commodities should not suffice to replace all the elements of these commodities. Or it may make it impossible to continue the process on the scale required by its technical basis, so that only a part of the machinery will remain in operation. Or all the machinery will work for only a fraction of the usual time. Finally, the expense incurred through waste varies in direct proportion to the price fluctuations of the raw material, rising when they rise and falling when they fall. But there is a limit here as well. The factory report for April 1850 maintained, quote, "One source of considerable loss arising from an advance in the price of the raw material would hardly occur to anyone but a practical spinner, viz., that from waste. I am informed that when cotton advances, the cost to the spinner, of the lower qualities especially, is increased in a ratio beyond the advance actually paid, because the waste made in spinning coarse yarns is fully 15%, and this rate, while it causes a loss of a halfpenny per pound, on cotton at 3½ per pound, brings up the loss to 1 penny per pound when cotton advances to 7 pence. Unquote. Reports of the Inspector of Factories, April 1850. But when, as a result of the American Civil War, the price of cotton rose to a level unequalled in almost 100 years, the report read differently. Quote, "The price now given for waste and its reintroduction in the factory in the shape of cotton waste go some way to compensate for the difference in the loss by waste between Surat cotton and American cotton, about 12.5%. The waste in working Surat cotton being 25%, the cost of the cotton to the spinner is enhanced 1/4 before he has manufactured it. The loss by waste used not to be of much moment when American cotton was 5 pence or 6 pence per pound, for it did not exceed 3 farthings per pound. But it is now of great importance, when upon every pound of cotton which cost 2 shillings, there is a loss by waste equal to 6 pence. Unquote. Reports of the Inspector of Factories, October 1863. Footnote. The report errs in the final sentence. Instead of 6 pence, it should be 3 pence for loss through waste. This loss amounts to 25% in the case of Surat, and only 12.5 to 15% in the case of American cotton. And this latter is meant, the same percentage having been correctly calculated for the price of 5 to 6 pence. It is true, however, that also in the case of American cotton, brought to Europe during the latter years of the Civil War, the proportion of waste often rose considerably higher than before. Friedrich Engels. End of footnote.